It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks for being here. We explore rare boreal forest, coastal wetlands, and an undeveloped sandy beach with views of the Apostle Islands on the shores of Lake Superior. It's a glimpse of the conservation efforts underway at Frog Bay Tribal National Park. And you can be part of this conversation. Call in with a question, share your perspectives, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Linda Nguyen is Environmental Director of the Red Cliff Band of Lake Superior Chippewa. Linda, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hello, hello. Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Good morning. So the park aims to protect these tracts of boreal forest, and there are reports that logging has removed most boreal forest from the Lake Superior shoreline over the last century. What can people experience when visiting the forest in this park?
So there are three trails that total about 2 miles. So at the trailhead, that's where you can park. There's no fee. And there to the left, there's a ravine trail, which has been designated as moderate for difficulty. And it meanders through birch groves, black ash swamps, hemlock and cedar and then it oversees the lake a little bit, and then it finally leads you down to the beach. And at the beach, you can see some of the Apostle Islands, such as Bear Island, Oak, Hermit, Stockton, and Michigan. And then on the way back, you have a choice to take the beach trail, which is about a quarter mile, which leads back up to the trailhead. And that one's a lot easier. So lots of features to see. There are kiosks that are at culturally significant spots that will talk about and showcase certain flora and fauna, give the Ojibwe name, and some of the uses for it. For them.
Linda, the views must be just breathtaking and so peaceful. What do you experience when you walk those trails?
That is a great question. So I've been with the Red Cliff Band since 2012. I am a St. Paul native, but I came up here to go to Northland College back in 2008. And the Lake Superior Basin just sucks you right in, and sometimes you just don't leave. I feel at peace when I hike Frog Bay Tribal National Park. It is open year round, so I have done some snowshoeing in the winter time, and it's beautiful, it's quiet, and it's freeing.
What is the tribe's approach to managing this rare forest that is so sensitive?
The park is managed by the Treaty Natural Resources Division. So, and the Environmental Department is a subset within that division. We manage the trail system that's on it. We ensure that the trails are clear for hikers, in the event of a storm damage. We also have summer youth interns that will go out there and assist us as well. We have wardens that will do patrolling, because it is closed from what is open from sunrise to sunset. And then the Environmental Department, which I help oversee, we do some water quality monitoring to ensure that beaches are safe to recreate at. And if they're not, we'll issue swimming advisories. We work with federal partners within the Lake Superior Basin to also watch out for algal blooms.
Mm. Yes.
And then we've done some wild rice restoration and reseeding efforts in Frog Creek, which is part of the CMA or Conservation Management Area.
Linda Nguyen is with us, Environmental Director for the Red Cliff Band of Lake Superior Chippewa, as we talk about Frog Bay Tribal National Park along the shores of Lake Superior. Get a glimpse of it. You can join in with your questions, and you can share your thoughts at any point. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Linda, here at the Changing Seasons, the Fall Color Report says autumn leaves are peaking in northern Wisconsin. How can people best enjoy the fall colors in Frog Bay Tribal National Park?
By coming up to visit, the parking, the trailhead area, can probably hold a capacity of about 10 cars. So get there early. But it is gorgeous. And if there's no parking available, then, you know, we invite you to visit other trails and then come back to Frog Bay Tribal National Park to hike ours.
How can visitors enjoy Frog Bay with respect to the Red Cliff community and with respect for the environment?
We do practice leave no trace.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever you bring, please pack it out. There are vault toilets there. And then leave everything as you come across it as you're hiking on the trail.
The park opened more than a decade ago. What is the significance of maintaining a tribal national park?
Well, part of the conservation management area, which is part of the park, is open to only tribal members to gather and practice their ceremonial and cultural practices. So in that sense, that's how we maintain and preserve that area for the next seven generations ahead.
I wonder why it is named Frog Bay, how the name stuck for this area of the peninsula.
To my knowledge and what I've been told, there were a lot of frogs in the area. I'm not a biologist by any means, so I don't know my frog species, but they are definitely significant in that area. And I'm assuming being so close to, you know, right on the shores of Lake Superior, the coastal wetlands provided that habitat. And continue to provide that habitat for the frogs.
Continue to provide that habitat. I wonder, is the frog forest at risk for like insect outbreaks or wildfires or you mentioned algae blooms or other ecological problems?
Right. We do have an invasive species program and, or we also call them non-local beings. And we have staff that go out and will monitor for emerald ash borer, spotted knapweed, other, you know, flora and fauna. So there is surveillance and continued monitoring to ensure that those threats, you know, stay at a minimum. And if should they increase, then, you know, we'll change our stewardship method and management. What's on the horizon from the environmental department, what we're keeping our eyes out on is that, yeah, like you had mentioned, the algal blooms and water quality. So, you know, there is historical and legacy logging within the area and the land is still trying to bounce back from that. And so we monitor our water quality program. We monitor for sedimentation, nutrients such as nitrogens and phosphates to see how that enters the system during any sort of rain events or climate change events.
Linda Nguyen is Environmental Director of the Red Cliff Band of Lake Superior Chippewa, our guide to Frog Bay Tribal National Park and conservation efforts underway. Call in with a question. You can share your thoughts at any point, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The Red Cliff Band of Lake Superior Chippewa emphasizes the sustainable management of natural resources. We get an update on the tribe's work to protect the rare forest at Frog Bay Tribal National Park and the undeveloped shoreline of Lake Superior. You can be part of this discussion. Call in with a question. You can add your thoughts at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Linda Wynn is Environmental Director of the Red Cliff Band of Lake Superior Chippewa. Linda, as the first tribal national park of its kind, what lessons are the Red Cliff learning that could benefit other park operators?
So lessons learned or things that other tribal nations can think about when they're looking to start a park. First thing would be community input and community support. You know, thinking about how the area being preserved may affect housing development down the line or future land use changes. Secondly, would be to assess internal staffing or equipment capacity and infrastructure to manage the park. And then thirdly, funding. As you know, we applied for federal funds and we had partnerships with the Bayfield Regional Conservancy. And one of the criteria or requirements was to also ensure that some of the lands would be open to the public. And then leveraging local partnerships such as the Bayfield Regional Conservancy to achieve overlapping goals of environmental protection and restoration for the next seven generations ahead.
Environmental protection and restoration, thinking about climate change and the Nelson Institute for Environmental Studies saying the average fall temperatures in your area are roughly 5 degrees Fahrenheit above 1950 levels. How is climate change affecting the park's ecosystem?
That is a great question. We continuously monitor, you know, our wildlife program is monitoring black bear, pine marten, and other species. And we have a dedicated fisheries program as well that is monitoring trout movement between the band's rivers into Lake Superior. But from the environmental department's end, we continue to monitor water quality. And for the most part, that hasn't been negatively impacted as of yet. The wild rice population and densities, however, have been through some of the climatic events such as sedimentation, and some of our wild rice beds are getting buried underneath 2 to 4 feet of sand at a time. We can also notice that some of the mouths, especially Frog Creek there being in the park, can close off for the majority of the summertime, which can prohibit fish movement from inland to the lake.
That makes me wonder, how does erosion affect the park? The Army Corps of Engineers says, you know, Lake Superior is nearly a foot above average water levels, Frog Bay following the shoreline in the Apostle Islands. What do you notice about erosion?
We have noticed that the beach, what used to be at least, you know, 5 to 10 feet, is now pretty much all the way up to where the sand meets the grasses or vegetation. So the beach is kind of disappearing.
And this is an undeveloped beach, meaning nothing has been built on it. You know, how do you conserve such a pristine area that is untouched?
Well, we do have our zoning and setback policies. So within the reservation boundaries, we have a team project and compliance review board. And for folks that are planning to do any sort of ground disturbance or building of anything, they will submit a PAC application. And this review board, which is composed of our Tribal Historic Preservation Office, zoning, land specialists, environmental health, and myself, we will review the project and ensure that it complies and aligns with some of the tribe's goals. And with that, we also have zoning districts. So the park is, I believe, completely zoned preserved. So there's to be no development whatsoever. And then for adjacent parcels or properties, we do take that into consideration when we're reviewing any sort of projects.
So every project is under scrutiny and looked at very closely.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm going to reintroduce you here. Linda Nguyen is Environmental Director for the Red Cliff Band of Lake Superior Chippewa as we talk about Frog Bay Tribal National Park along the shores of Lake Superior. Understand the challenges and the opportunities. You can join in with your question. You can share your experiences and your perspectives at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Linda, Frog Bay has received a Governor's Tourism Award for stewardship. How do park officials approach being stewards of the land?
Well, we ensure that, we monitor and assess baseline conditions to ensure that any sort of deviation from that is addressed, such as, erosion or non-local beings coming in and changing species composition. We also involve the youth a lot. We work with the Bayfield school system, which has tribal and non-tribal youth, and we bring them out to do, to shadow us when we're doing any sort of macroinvertebrate collection, to look at stream health, or looking at pit tag stations with our fisheries staff, or just general trail maintenance. Involving the youth like that can help continue on this legacy of, mindful stewardship of the park.
Mindful stewardship, and it's like this hands-on approach to involving the youth and making sure the next generation mirrors the conservation efforts of the present generation.
Yes.
And the park says it preserves the historical and cultural use of the land for the Chippewa Nation. What can people learn about the tribe's history at the park?
Well, I believe every summer, there's been a few articles produced about this as well, but our Tribal Historic Preservation Office, they will work with an academic institution as well as some archaeological professionals, and they'll do some digs. And there have been artifacts that have been found. So the area has been, and that gives insight on how the park area was used at one time. They sometimes there are cultural demonstrations that are open to the public as well, such as wild rice reseeding and wild rice processing demonstrations, as well as fish net setting by some of our tribal programs. So that, if visitors time it right, or they come up just for that, those types of events are available to the public to get that cultural significance. And as I previously mentioned, there are kiosks that are on the landscape on the trail that showcase, the Ojibwe Mo'in name for cedar, for example, and some of the uses. So that is also another tool to learn how certain species were used and are used.
Could you share with us about the spiritual ceremonies or the cultural ceremonies that are performed at Frog Bay?
I will just say there's a wide range of ceremonies that are specific to the individuals or to the clans, and they take let's see, they occur during specific times of the year or seasons.
What could people do to better support Frog Bay Tribal National Park as they listen to this conversation?
Come up and visit. Learn about the land, the features that are there. There isn't a fee to hike the park either, but there is a donation box.
Linda, thank you so much for joining us and for sharing with us Frog Bay Tribal National Park.
Thank you for having me.
Linda Wynn is Environmental Director of the Red Cliff Band of Lake Superior, Chippewa. Ahead this hour, we make crepes with a Milwaukee native and learn more about this French delicacy and what a Milwaukee native is trying to do in her hometown. I'm Kate Archer Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. We meet a Wisconsin native who opens a creperie in Milwaukee with insights on this French delicacy and how to make it as a new eatery. Now it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Maureen McCollum with a story about connecting with nature.
Quantee's winter's goal is to get people outside more. As Madison Public Library's naturalist in residence, she wants people to think about and appreciate nature. Christina Leffring went to Madison's Troy Gardens to bring us Winter Story.
So beautiful. Mm-hmm. If I was just take a silent moment, take a couple of deep breaths, just take it in.
You can hear the insects singing their final songs, squirrels frantically preparing for winter, and migratory birds preparing for their long journey. And Quantis Winters wants you to take it all in.
I want you to see the beauty and the enchantment of, like, the trees and how they sound when the wind is blowing through them, the vibrant colors of the flowers, the smell of dirt, which is, like, my favorite smell on the planet. I wish I could bottle it up. Like, I want you guys to, like, have that feeling, almost like being a child again. Like, everything amazes you when you're a child.
Nature has been a safe space for Winters since she was a young girl. Now, she's the Madison Public Library's naturalist in residence. Her first event in this role was a meet and greet and tour at Troy Farms, where she was an apprentice in 2019. She says that apprenticeship deeply transformed her relationship with farming.
My only understanding of agriculture and Black people was slavery. So I came here with the intention of dismantling that by getting my hands in the dirt and doing this work outside of that context.
She had started this work when she learned that her grandfather had been Gullah Geechee, descendants of Africans who were enslaved, and built a distinct culture in the coastal southeastern U.S.
Knowing how to grow food was something that was used to sustain their families and their communities. And so with that perspective in mind, it really helped me to see that this is a gift. There's a lot of medicine out here. And I don't just mean as in food is medicine, but I mean on a spiritual level, being able to know how to grow your own food reminds you of the smallness of yourself and the bigness of nature.
Winters has worn many hats over the years. She's a doula, an herbalist. She hosted a PBS Wisconsin show called Let's Grow Stuff. Plus, she's an artist and a writer. But instead of taking one hat off and putting another on, all of Winters' hats seem to overlap.
There's an aspect of each that requires me to nurture a certain aspect of humanity, and I think that's what links it all together. When I'm creating art and when I'm writing, I'm trying to, like, nurture the minds of the people who are engaging in what I'm creating. When it comes to my doula work, I'm trying to nurture people's relationship with their bodies. And when I'm working with the land, I'm trying to nourish us not only physically by growing food, but also nourishing that mental, emotional, spiritual aspect.
Maybe that drive to nurture is one reason she's so comfortable with children. When some of the toddlers keep trying to climb on picnic benches, she scoops them up and puts them in her lap.
Can we sit together, Poo-Poo? I don't want you to get on the table. children are like very much a part of what I do and what inspires me. Just seeing how they approach the world and how they navigate the world with that like freshness and innocence.
For so many of us, our connection and knowledge of our natural world has been lost. Winter's journey as a naturalist is about reclaiming that connection and also the wonder we often leave behind in childhood.
Sometimes the world just kind of goes gray, but we don't take a time to just like stop and be like, wow, what's around me is beautiful. And so I would hope to be able to offer that through like all the different things that we do together, is for y'all to like walk away with that and to feel like a kid again when you're outside.
Yeah, great question. Thank you.
Yes. Christina Leffring brought us that story on Quantee's Winters of Madison. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with Wisconsin Humanities. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org and on Facebook and Instagram. I'm Maureen McCollum.
It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We have Wisconsin native Kate Bryan here, whose livelihood revolves around crepes, owner of the new Seven Swans Crepery in the River West neighborhood of Milwaukee. Growing from a location she launched in Kansas City, Missouri, with food truck origins. Call in at any point with your question. Share comments at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Kate, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here.
Yes. So in the spring, you open a new crepery in your digs. This is less than a mile from where you went to high school. Pulled you back to your neighborhood?
You know, just running a business in a state far away from your family is quite a thing in itself. And then doing that during a global pandemic, it kind of reprioritizes things. And so the dream just kind of started brewing of moving back to Milwaukee, being closer to family. And, you know, my parents always were like, well, when are you going to open one here? When are you going to open one here? And I
would you felt the pressure.
Always. Well, I didn't take them serious. I just laughed at them. Like, I'm never opening another crepery. That was hard. And here I am.
Well, let's talk a bit about that origin story. So for over 3 years, you ran a food truck in Kansas City. Kansas City, Missouri. Then in early 2020, you opened a brick and mortar crepery, Seven Swans Crepery in Kansas City. So why move from the food truck to a fixed location?
Well, you know, the fixed location was always the plan. And it actually kind of took some wrangling to get myself to even consider the food truck option. But I knew I had a lot to learn. I knew I needed to kind of build slowly. I knew that financially that's just a better way to get started. And it was just a much better on-ramp on all levels to new business ownership. It was one of the most spontaneous decisions of my life. A couple brick and mortar locations had fallen through and friends were kind of like, why don't you just consider this again? And I popped on Craigslist, Facebook Marketplace, and there was this beautiful 79 camper trailer that I fell in love with and bought the next day. And the rest was history.
It could get hot, though, in the food truck making those crepes.
Yeah, it was rough. It was Kansas City summers are very hot. We used, you know, the real French cast iron crepe makers. And so that led to the eventuality of really needing to find a brick and mortar location. And so at that point, honestly, I was kind of in a place of, well, you know, wherever a location comes up first, whether it's Milwaukee, whether it's Kansas City, and everything was up in the air for a little while and then landed this space in Kansas City that's just so perfect. And And so that was the beginnings of that adventure.
Yes. What have you learned from your first location that you're bringing to Milwaukee? Do you feel like you have some lessons learned?
Oh, wow. I mean, I've learned so much. Goodness sakes, how do I even begin to? I really started the food truck with very little business knowledge and just winged it, you know. I've found that the most important thing that I've learned is to just like have the right people around you to support your staff, which is really what made this move possible. Was I had like a really incredible crew of people that were excited about the opportunity for me. And goodness sakes, so many lessons.
Who taught you how to make crepes in the first place?
That would be my dad. Yeah. That was something that we grew up eating as the family. And as my younger brother likes to say, when he eats the dad's skinny pancake, which is on the menu, that it tastes exactly like mom not wanting to make dinner.
How much do your crepes resemble your father's crepes? Or have you made some little variations?
My crepes are much prettier. My dad's crepes were more like just piles of crepe on the plate. Throw some butter, throw some syrup on there.
You've described the aesthetic of your new creperie as Ukrainian grandmother chic. What does that mean?
You know, when I started as a food truck, it was a vintage trailer. And I just thought, well, this is kind of a fun opportunity to just get kind of a little bit more quirky and just like actually just dive into all of the things that I really love, which are just colors and patterns. And I've spent a lot of time in Ukraine, and I have studied abroad in Russia in college. And there is just this, like, the grandmothers, they're so beautiful, and they like, they'll have like a floral scarf and a plaid skirt, and they're just bright colors. And so, so that was my inspiration.
Your crepes then resemble Eastern European blini more than French crepes. So what is the difference there? What's the distinction between the two styles?
Blini is more of, it's a little bit of a spongier crepe. They're a little like softer and spongier. French crepes tend to be a little bit drier and crispier. And so I have kind of modeled my recipe a little bit more around the Eastern European version.
Kate Bryan runs a new creperie in Milwaukee, her hometown, as we explore the influence of this delicacy in Wisconsin. Call in with a question. Share what's on your mind, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We learn about the passion and the business side of making crepes and becoming established as a new restaurant in Milwaukee. Wisconsinite Kate Bryan is owner of Seven Swans Creperie, which grew out of her location in Kansas City, Missouri. Call in with a question. Bring your thoughts along the way. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Let's get into ingredients. The main ingredients of French crepe batter is flour, eggs, milk, or water. Do your crepes include more ingredients?
We do not use water. It's milk, eggs, butter, and flour. So it's a little bit of a richer, eggier texture. Yeah.
When you're using just a handful of ingredients, how precise do you have to be? Are crepes like an exact science?
No, there is a lot of wiggle room. There are lots of different textures. There's lots of different ways. I would say that my crepe batter is an exact science to me, just because I have, you know, I spent a lot of time just honing in on the exact right quantities for the texture I was looking for.
But you have to buy ingredients too. So you have to plan.
Yes, exactly. But crepes are very forgiving.
You serve savory and sweet, and your Goodfellas crepe includes bacon and a sunny side up egg. The clean crepe has lavender lemon curd, fresh berries, and whipped cream. Do you recommend customers try savory or sweet first? How do you go about this?
I mean, I always recommend coming with a friend and sharing. Our crepes are a pretty good size. You will not leave hungry. And so often people ask me, like, would it be too much to get two? And like, yeah, you should share a sweet one. The Goodfellas also is a fun option in between, where it is the bacon, the cheese, and strawberry jam. So you have a little bit of a sweet and savory thing happening. That is definitely our most popular crepe. But, you know, just work your way through the menu. Find out what you like.
Can crepes be seasonal, or can you source local ingredients at the kind of the time of peak harvest?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we change our menu every 3 months. So we have 4 or 5 crepes on the menu that are just always there. They are our mainstays, and everything else rotates with the season. Mm. So even like just now, we just had an apple crisp crepe just for a few weeks while we were getting our fresh apples. We've switched over to pumpkin.
Oh, there's the pumpkin. I was wondering where the pumpkin spice crepe. You know, the pumpkin mm-hmm. people were knocking on the door here.
we've got a pumpkin crepe.
Well, you shared with us the recipe for lavender lemon curd crepe filling, mm-hmm. and that's at WPR.org/mornings. Can you walk us through your lavender lemon curd and how you put it together?
Yeah, absolutely. That is one of our mainstay crepes that has been on the menu from the day one. A curd is just a yummy slurry of butter and egg yolks and sugar. And then we just infuse lavender leaves in there as we're cooking it. It's kind of a long, slow process where you just want to heat it up very slowly so that it all gels together and the egg yolks get nice and creamy. So that is a labor of love every week.
Lemon can be like that zesty punch. How tart do you go on the curd?
It's definitely on the tart side. I try to keep things not too sweet, and so it's tart, but it's really nicely balanced with like our fresh whipped cream on top and berries, and the crepe itself is so buttery and warm. It all balances really nicely.
Have you tried it, the recipe with Meyer lemons, I wonder, when they're in season?
I have. Yeah. Back in the food truck days when I could afford to buy, when making things in smaller quantities, let's say.
When you were running to Hawaii to get those Meyer lemons, you know.
Right. When all of a sudden you're making gallons of lemon curd a week.
You scaled up a bit. Well, what do you recommend for sourcing like food grade lavender? Where do you go there?
The brand I believe is Star West Organics or Star West Botanicals. So I source all organic products for herbs, especially. You can kind of just look up any kind of food grade lavender.
Okay. Kate Bryan with us talking crepes, Seven Swans Crepery owner in Milwaukee. You can join in the conversation. Question and comments welcome along the way. 800-642-1234. Okay. Let us into your kitchen in Milwaukee. What is your crepe making equipment like?
We have 4 big, that I think, believe 15 to 16 inch cast iron crepe makers. They're just flat on top, and you pour the crepe batter on top and take a little, it looks like a little rake almost, and spin it around, and then you flip them, and it's a little bit of an art. It takes a little practice at first, but It's always fun watching my employees look at them like so intimidated. And then within an hour, they're just
having the time
of their life. Yep.
So these would be like professional grade kitchen equipment.
Yes.
How would you recommend how do we modify at home? Yeah.
Oh, yes. At home, any frying pan will do. Just plop a good amount of butter in there and then I would say for your average size frying pan, about a third of a cup of batter. And you can take the pan, pick it up and just spread the crack crepe batter around till it's thin around and covering all the edges. And then just take a little spatula and flip it over.
So how has it been staffing up in these times and getting a consistent staff?
You know, in Milwaukee, I feel like I have been very lucky. We have had a consistent crew of really, really wonderful people. So it's a lot of word of mouth. You know, you find somebody and then they tell somebody. And I've also really, really taken advantage of the neighborhood group, Facebook group, and have garnished many employees. Most of my employees live in the neighborhood. So that's fun.
That is neat. It keeps it so local and so personal. How have you decorated and the building itself? What does that look like?
The building itself was a bar called Dino's for goodness. I mean, I believe it was there for over 40 years. And then it had transitioned into kind of a new iteration of that same named business for a year or so. So it was pretty fun walking into a space that was so different than what I wanted it to be. But the second I saw it, it was already finished in my head. I was like, okay, this is going to be fun. So I haven't done any major remodeling, but just painting. We have lots of fun wallpaper. We have one wall that is just a patchwork of various vintage wallpapers that I have been collecting for years. I like to call it the country cousin of our Kansas City location because it just has a little bit more of a homey country vibe.
Do your family members stop by?
Oh, yes. Yeah. my dad helped do a lot of the work. And so he gets free crepes for life.
they want to keep you here. They're going to do anything possible to keep you local in the neighborhood.
Yeah. I have a brother. My brother's sister-in-law live just a block away with their 3-year-old and 5-month-old. So my 3-year-old nephew, I mean, as far as he's concerned, he owns the place and he just walks in and demands his chocolate crepe and lemonade and sits at the bar swinging his legs. And it is just the craziest dream come true. It's so fun.
Oh, Kate, all the best to you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Kate Bryan is owner of Seven Swans Creperie with locations in Kansas City, Missouri, and a new one in the River West neighborhood of Milwaukee, where she is from. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.